The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union's cash rewards card helps you slay this season. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. Marcus, Melanie, how are you guys?
Good.
Are you guys ready for Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Oh, so ready.
Thanksgiving is our biggest family holiday.
Yeah, that's the
big
one.
So we have over 70 family members come into town, and we all meet up at the Lazy J, and we have... It's a whole week ordeal.
Wow, the craziest thing you've ever seen in your entire life. Helicopters flying around. It's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's great, man.
Thanksgiving is my favorite time of year because everyone
Halloween kicks it off, right? That's kind of the start date, and then we roll into all the holidays, and this is a good one.
He likes the Halloween. The whole time
Christmas is my favorite.
I'm planning, I have a spreadsheet that I start in July for the Thanksgiving, things that we're going to do every day, because we're there for a full 10 days at the ranch. It's like a whole, it's a big deal.
It's an operation for sure.
Yeah.
Well, before we get to the Patreon question of the day, what about your favorite Thanksgiving food?
Oh, green bean casserole and sweet potato casserole.
Oof, for green bean casserole.
She makes this sweet potato crunch.
Yeah, sweet potato casserole, yeah.
But it's got some crunch?
What I'm talking about.
It's got a crunch topping. It's got a pecan and
it's a race for that.
Brown
that,
sugar
that thing always goes
topping
pretty
that
quick.
Is so freaking good.
Yeah, that thing goes fast.
Mm-hmm. I might share it on the Patreon site.
That'd be
awesome. Yeah, for our Patreon.
I mean, that dish goes quick.
Yeah.
There's usually four or five of them. Actually, we don't have enough every year. We keep.
And I always make Paula Deen's ooey gooey pumpkin butter cake. And that goes so quick. That goes over. Nobody wants the pumpkin pie. They want the Paula Deen's ooey gooey pumpkin butter cake. It's really good.
I love Thanksgiving food.
That woman can cook.
Chris, what about you? You have a favorite Thanksgiving food?
Yeah, it's probably a sweet potato casserole. We always add a little bourbon to it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's
There's always bourbon flowing around on holidays.
Yeah. I always get picked to make it every year. So my mother-in-law says that's my chore.
Mm, nice. Do you add marshmallows?
Yeah, we do the crunchy top and then add the marshmallows on top of the crunchy.
Yeah, so, yeah. I do that too.
That's the thing that puts me in that food coma.
Right? I'm so hungry.
While you're watching a football game and you wake up during the football game and go back and eat.
Oh, yes.
Marcus's mom makes homemade rolls, yeast rolls that are so freaking good.
You can knock somebody out with them. They're so thick. And they break down into three pieces. It's a time of year. Throughout the seasons, there's certain foods that we cook and that we don't. And that's why it's like a gift every time the season rolls around, because you know you're getting those. And when mom starts doing the breaking the bread, man, stand by. Everyone comes in for that.
Yeah.
Plus, she makes them into cinnamon rolls. That's the best part.
Yeah. She makes
half of them into
cinnamon
rolls. She saturates
those
suckers with raisins and cinnamon rolls, that glaze.
Do y'all have any specific Thanksgiving traditions beyond the meals?
Yes. We do a turkey trot the day after Thanksgiving. So I actually have a runner's arch, and the whole family, even the little kids, we do a 5K. And we go fishing. We do a softball game.
There's a father-son duck hunt
yeah,
the day
there's
before.
A father-son duck hunt.
To get
That's cool.
On, yeah.
That's yeah,
pretty cool.
We,
all kinds of stuff we do.
This year we're doing a trail ride. A family trivia game. We have a whole list.
Throw
of...
knives at each other.
We have all kinds of stuff that we do. We do a lot of puzzles. We're a puzzle family and board game family. We like all that stuff. So.
Oh, sounds like a blast. Well, I guess I should ask the real Patreon question today, which is, what is a habit of yours, good or bad, that you've seen your kids pick up on?
That's a good question. Probably a smart ass.
Absolutely.
I'd have to be a smart mouth. A smart mouth in line. I figured out when I was going to get me in trouble.
So both of them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My daughter's the worst. Uh-huh. My son, he won't give me the business because he knows I'll tune his ass up.
Axe does it to everybody else. Axe has Marcus's sarcasm down to an art where he doesn't even realize that it is sarcasm. He thinks it's a way of communication.
Yeah.
And he was doing it in like pre-K, and I had explained to the teachers, like, that's how his dad is. I can't, nothing we can do.
I never knew that. His dad.
I never knew that. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff I'm learning as I go. That's awesome.
Yeah, sarcasm for sure.
A smart mouth.
I don't know about my bad habits because they correct me at everything. Literally everything I do wrong, correct me on all of my bad habits.
Oh, gosh.
How about you, bro? I saw you raise your eyebrows. What, you got a lot of them?
No. I had to think, man. I try not to have bad habits. but I would say similar to what you guys said, but smack talking. We smack talk a lot in our house, and sometimes my kids pick that up and they do it at inappropriate times. So that's probably it.
That's probably the lesson too, because we do it when our friends roll over, especially as soon as my boys come in, it's on. I mean, it's the way we communicate that with movie quotes and everything else in between. So it didn't really cross my mind that would have been a problem.
I know one thing Addie picked up from your mom is the scary movies, like horror films.
Yeah. Well, they're not scared of anything now. They are now, but they won't be when they get older.
I'm like, no, don't pick that up.
I'm so afraid to be a parent just because
you should be.
I just think about all those things.
I'd be afraid to be your kid too.
I think so. I'd be okay. All right. Okay.
I'm glad you said that out loud because I was thinking it. And I was like, I'd be terrified to be your damn kid.
Please don't be a dad.
You're a dog dad.
Yeah. Dog dad.
There goes the smack talking dogs.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Man, we've got a great guest in store today. Chris Cruz served 2002 to 2006, paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne, U.S. military veteran and co-owner. He understands well the value of patriotism. He is the owner of Cruz. Is it Cruz Flags?
Cruz Customs Flags.
Cruz Customs Flags. And you guys have got to know his story. They're doing a lot for the veterans. Chris, thanks so much for being on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, brother, I'm interested in this one, man. We like what you put together and what you're doing. So, and thanks again for your service. But we start this off, man. Let's back it up a little bit. Introduce yourself, man, to all our listeners, and let's talk about this, how we got into it.
Yeah. So, like the intro said, I served 2002, 2006 as a paratrooper from South Mississippi.
Where?
Around Laurel, Hattiesburg. Down south. So grew up playing football my whole life, and then moved on, joined the military, and then I worked corporate America for 15 years, and I did this as a passion project. It really just started when my wife wanted something in our home that represented her Kentucky roots and my service, and we had a big wall in the house, and I was like, why don't we just make an American flag out of a bourbon barrel, because bourbon represents Kentucky, and that the American flag is our banner. It represents military service like no other, because we wore it on our sleeve, going into combat every day. So ended up making one, didn't even know anything about woodworking. We had some pretty rudimentary tools in the garage, and I just kind of figured it out. And then when I was out there, I found out it was kind of therapeutic, like to get out and get away from the yelling and screaming kids and kind of have my time to reflect and get away from things. And I was like, man, this is pretty cool. And Christmas rolled around, it was about this time of year, back in 2016. And, my father and father-in-law are both veterans. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to make them each a flag rather than exchange, Academy or Lowe's gift cards like we always used to. And, when I was out there, I was like, yeah, this is really therapeutic, and we can help some people with this. And then when I saw the reaction on my father and father-in-law's face at Christmas, I was like, yeah, there's something here. Like they really, I never had that reaction before from them at Christmas. So, we decided to start a business as a passion project out of our garage. I had a full-time job. My wife had a full-time job. We had kids, but I had this vision of being able to have a shop full of veterans making American flags from bourbon barrels. Bourbon is big in Kentucky. It's big across the United States now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, and there's so many metaphors. We always say bourbon barrels once served a good purpose aging bourbon, and veterans once served a good purpose serving their country, and we help them both find their new purpose in our shop. So that's kind of how we got started.
Them age together after we get out. You say your parents were your both your dad and your father-in-law are military?
Yeah.
And you settled back down in Kentucky?
Yeah, that's where I live now. Yep.
Now, is that your family across the board? I mean, was that like a mandatory thing, or did they push that on you? Because in our family, I mean, you go all the way back, there's service all through the lineage, but it wasn't really a mandatory thing. Just kind of understood.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't mandatory. I actually didn't know what I wanted to do in my life in college. Changed my major a few times and just decided to join up.
Did you play sports or anything growing up?
Yeah, played football all the way up to 2 years of college in Mississippi. Yep.
Brothers and sisters?
A lot. I got four sisters and a brother.
Yeah, that's I'm the youngest. Right.
Tell us a little bit about your childhood and how you decided to go into the military.
Yeah, so my childhood was kind of crazy, mixed family. Never knew my father, my biological father, but my father that I consider my father, he adopted me at a young age and brought me in. So I had you know, stepbrothers and sisters along the way too. But football, you know, you guys are in Texas. Football is religion down there. And
oh yeah.
Same way in Mississippi. And, you know, there isn't a whole lot to do in South of Mississippi. So I played football, kept me out of trouble, grew to love it. Played 2 years of college, went to a little junior college there, Jones County Junior College. And then I got told, this is kind of part of the never quit story. I got told I wasn't good enough to play anymore. So I played from third grade to 2 years of college and was told, you know what, you're not good enough anymore. And that kind of hurt me a little bit. I was like, well, okay, what do I do now? So I said, I'm used to being told what to do, so yeah. Why not join the military? And it's the best decision I ever made.
It's almost as if you hear we were talking about this the other day. If you hear that phrase, like if someone comes up to you and says, you're not good enough to be here doing that, you actually should go through the first part of your life looking to hear that. That's the trigger phrase. Like just like yeah. Please is the magic word. That's the trigger phrase phrase that lets you know that you're about to take off in the right direction. Because when people, I've heard so many people say, man, it's like you ain't supposed to be here. This is not the right thing for you. And they're the ones that are usually sitting out there writing the self-help books and motivating people to do great things. It's almost as if your mind is programmed and sits around to hear that one line. And once you do, you just go. So I got to know how the hell you picked the Army, though, and the 82nd. Because I was over, like I said, I was over in Vietnam with you back in the day, so which I had a great time. I wasn't assigned to the Army, but they sent you straight there? Where'd you go to boot camp?
Relaxing Jackson, Fort Jackson, yeah, South Carolina. Then I did my individual training at Fort Lee, Virginia, and then airborne school. And sent me over to Bragg.
I'll never forget rolling into Bragg that first time, man. I was on my way to our medical training. So SEALs, we don't have our own medical pipeline. We have to go over to see you guys. And they had that sign on at the front gate that said, if we can go 82 days without killing somebody, well, you get a 4-day Liberty Pass. And they never made it. Yeah. And the craziest thing I've ever seen was the mass exit. When you guys mass exit, that out of an airplane out there on those DZs, that, because when we're in the plane, no one likes to move. You don't want anything to go wrong. I've never seen anybody so fired up. You want to know what the inside of a can of whoop ass looks like? Watch the 82nd do a mass exit. And I mean, they're pulling on the inside of that, jerking the damn lines off the interior of the cables off the skin of the aircraft. And then when it comes out, imagine a big blue sky, being in the ocean, you know, those man-of-war jellyfishes? Well, this is a man-of-war. That's where that comes from. They look like the exact same thing when they're falling from the sky. Big, huge, freaking jellyfishes. and you hear people screaming and yelling. It is the craziest. You want to talk about saturating the battlefield? I'd never seen that before. I mean, it blotted out the sun. It was, yeah, y'all was some of the craziest son bitches I ever come across, for sure.
Yeah, they'll have about six or seven C-17s, and they'll make one pass, drop some Humvees and stuff out, and then they'll throw us out, and it's, yeah, it's crazy. It's a good time.
Yeah. That was a hell of a time watching. All right, so how was that? How many deployments?
Only did one deployment. That was enough for me. Yeah. We went over in 04, the fall of 04. My unit was the one. I don't know if you're familiar with FOB Ridgeway.
Uh-uh.
Near Habanilla.
I know where that's at.
Yeah, so we were right across from Habanilla at the old, it was old Iraqi Air Force Base. We set up shop there.
Yeah. We spent some time in Hobby for sure. And I probably blew through there, but you punched out in 06, right?
Yeah, I got out in 05, terminal leave 06, yeah.
Now, when you were in, was this one of those deals where when it was time for you to rotate out, you had an idea what you wanted to do, or you just kind of like came out the same way we went in?
Yeah, I actually, my now wife gave me an ultimatum. So I didn't have a plan. I moved. I was used to being away from home. There wasn't much in Mississippi. So I moved to Kentucky without a plan.
So you married while you were in?
Not married while I was in, but married right after I got out.
Yeah, that's the same way I did it too. But I never really thought about it like that. But rotating in, you kind of like, man, we didn't have you kind of had an idea of what you wanted to do, but you're not really. The military is great for that. I remember signing up gives you all the opportunity in the world, not only get some skill sets, but to kind of sit back and look at what else you want to do. Granted, we got some wars dropped on us, so we were always busy. But a lot of the guys, when they rotated out just like they came in. They're like, I don't have any idea what I'm going to. Got all those skill sets and everything that they gave us, man. You just don't have any direction and which way to go. That's the best part about having the wives. I was like, they're like the new admirals and generals. And I was like, man, just tell us what to do. Soldiers have to be told what to do. So do SEALs, really. I mean, you got to have a plan of attack and attack your plan. That was one of the difficult things I remember rotating out was that.
It's hard to build a resume after you get out of the military because it's hard to translate some of the things we did into corporate America, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Writing it down, for sure. I was talking to some of our buddies, and they were like, man, you know, there's no job description for snipers out there unless you're an actual sniper. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, not for that title. But if you take everything that went into making up that sniper, that absolutely goes into corporate America. Patience, discipline, all that. So attention to detail.
I did find out, you know, when I got a real job, if you will, I found it was easy.
Yeah, right?
I found, like, only 8 hours a day, that's cool. I can do that. I mean, not sweating, that's cool. I can do that too.
I try and tell guys that too. And the guys who come out and go back into college, it's just the work ethic and the discipline. I mean, they go in there and just crush college. And the people who get the normal 9-to-5 jobs, we have to go in and do that, it's just boring to them. It's not that it's hard, it's just differently different in a way where it kind of gets boring to us. Because one cool thing about being in the service, man, is the day switched up. There wasn't really a normal day.
What did you do when you got out?
So I ended up getting a job as an environmental health safety person at Fort Knox here in Kentucky. The KBR is who I worked for, a government contractor. They ran everything at Fort Knox, from issuing uniforms to changing out traffic lights. So worked there a little while, and then I became a safety professional for some pretty big companies. Did everything that corporate America told you to do, like moved up the ladder, got the degree, did all the things that you would consider successful, and just never was really fulfilled.
Explain what that feeling's like. I mean, is it like I hear people talk about that. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, when you serve in the military, you you don't really realize it as soon as you get out, because when you get out, you want to just kind of like leave service behind you for a little while and kind of move on. But later on, after a few years, you're like, man, that was a big deal what we did. And, and then you do get a regular job and you don't, I mean, whatever you're doing is not near as purposeful as what you did in the military. And you also miss the camaraderie. You miss your boys, you miss your, all the banner therapy you give each other and all of that. So really missed all that, the last 15 years. So
that's true. It's almost, and they don't tell you that either. When you get out, I mean, when you're getting out of the service, there's, I say for every 10 you're in, it takes 2 years to kind of detox, right? And then kind of back that down. But it's almost just as soon as you get out, not only do you not want to do anything, you don't want to do anything. I mean, you don't have any responsibilities. You grow your hair out, your beard, flip-flop. I mean, just kind of be that lazy person. And that's a real thing. I remember going through that. But then that it's almost as this, at the same time you're doing that, you do have to be looking for something else. Usually a hobby, something to keep you occupied, because we can be lazy for sure. Mm-hmm. And but I noticed once that new passion came in, because there was no other. When I was wanting to be in the military and the SEAL teams, that was my main focus. That's all I thought about it. I dreamed about it and all that stuff like that. When I got out, I didn't have that again. And it wasn't that I wasn't bored or anything. I had plenty to do. It's just I didn't have something to do. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but where you're completely focused on that. And so the wife and kids, that takes precedent. But if we focus so much on that, that's all we'll focus on. And you can burn them out on that. So yeah. It's the great part about it is having your buddies around and seeing all this, because when something new flies in and it catches your attention, man, you can go after it with a passion like you can't believe.
Yeah, my wife tells me all the time I get tunnel vision. Like I'll get locked into something, and very much like this business, nothing else matters, you know, for a long time. I have to get reeled back in from time to time. You're right. Once we get focused on something, it's on.
It's bad, right? I was trying to explain this. It's like not only do we focus on the position or the part that we're supposed to focus on, we'll focus on something inside of that, and we'll get so locked onto it that it's. That's why we have to have them to pull back. My chief would say, you're going to jerk those reins back, man, and get them out of there, because that's how they are. That's how we were trained. Our generation is different, man. We were just different than everybody else.
Marcus will go deep, and I'll pull him back a little bit.
I can't help it, man. That's the way we are.
So you ended up turning, after your work, you ended up turning your hobby, what you found as your passion, into your business. Tell us about that. What does your business look like now?
Yeah, well, that transition was a little thrown upon me as well. So a month before Christmas, before COVID, they eliminated my position at work. So I have two young children and no steady job a month before Christmas. So luckily, I had this as a passion project, and we've grown pretty significantly through the years. And we invested all our money back into it. Like we didn't really take any money from the business for 3.5 years. We put everything back in because it was something I believe strongly in to hire a bunch of guys. So then, you know, COVID hit, and I was like, well, what are we going to do? and I had this as a full-time job, and you know, I was providing for multiple families, and I'm like, oh, this is crazy. So we ended up creating a flag called America One Heartbeat, because if you guys remember when COVID kicked off, people weren't buying wooden American flags. They were buying toilet paper and groceries. Yeah. So I was like, how are we going to survive as a business? And my wife works in an emergency room, and she's like, we're going to be working a lot of long hours. We're going to need, you know, some food, whatever. I said, well, why don't we put a heartbeat line through one of our flags and give all the profits to your hospital? Like, I was thinking pretty small at the time. And she said, sure, we'll do it. So we got on some local news here in Louisville. And then Fox picked us up, and we ended up selling, I think, 5,000 flags in a couple of months. And we were able to donate $70,000 to two different hospitals here locally. Yeah. Not only were we able to do that, we were able to hire another guy, buy some equipment, and survive as a business. Not even survive. We were able to thrive after that, in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of me losing my full time job.
That's really cool.
And that's that flag that you had the that you're talking about, those QR codes or the PR, that sinus rhythm.
Yeah,
the EKG sign, sinus rhythm looking deal.
Yeah,
that's squared away, man. That's that outside the box thinking.
Yeah,
it always comes to me in the shower. I don't know why, but it does.
That's when I get my best thinking too.
Right, and most people won't even. I bet if you sat down and asked everybody that, some of the greatest ideas, and they just get overlooked, right? As soon as you step out of that. But
yeah,
it's those little things. Because you're right. When we got hit, man, people were focused on the essentials, the what they need, not the luxuries.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
something that that was considered a luxury when you when you're looking at it. But when times get that's how it's like a two-sided coin with you. Like, it's art, but then when times get tough and everyone's in the gutter, man, they look to that same thing for motivation.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the...
Well, it was kind of cool. It was a trifecta. Like, when people were buying, they wanted to do something for these healthcare workers, and they didn't know what to do. Like, you know, they knew they were going to have it hard, so we created a product that they could buy for them. Not only were they able to do that, they were supporting a, you know, small veteran-owned business, and we were donating back to the medical community financially, so... there was no reason why someone wouldn't want to buy one for a healthcare worker. So that's what they were doing. People were giving gifts all over the place.
That's
We got multiple emails saying, "Hey, can you tell me who bought this for me?" Like,
so
surprise gifts.
How did you get the whiskey barrel? How would that come online?
Yeah.
And can you just go out and get that? Because I know y'all got plenty of them. I've been to some of the distilleries. Mm-hmm. They're pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's probably our number one question. Where do you get your barrels? So, believe it or not, the used barrel market is bigger than the new barrel market, because bourbon officially can't be used. An oak barrel can only be used one time for bourbon. So after that, it has to go do something else. So,
what does that mean?
That means it. They ship it out to Scotland, Ireland. They, you know, you have the new beers
and they use
now
it for
that
bourbon?
They're aging
it. What is that? Does it eat? I thought that those casks, you kept them in, it's like a flavor. Is that not how that works? Like, you reconstitute that
wine
stuff?
Well, they do, but by law, it can only be used once for bourbon.
Oh.
So then it's reused. So part of that reuse of the barrel for other things, scotch, other whiskeys, wines, all that stuff. They have a used barrel cooperage where they repair it. So if there's a leak or whatever from being used and, you know, it's aged or whatever, and it has a crack in it, they repair them. So they basically tear the barrels apart if it's a bad leak or whatever. And they use the other parts and pieces to repair some of the other barrels. So they just scavenge to kind of, it's like a junkyard, if you will, for barrels. So the more they can ship out, the better. And then they end up accumulating more parts and pieces than they can use, and that's what we get.
So do you have a contact, like, with one of the distilleries that you get used stuff, or through one of those junkyard
places? No, actually, just
places?
So there's two used barrel cooperages. So the new barrel makers actually have a used barrel division. So that's part of their supply chain, is they sell new barrels to the distilleries, and then they get the old barrels back from the distilleries to ship out. So they're making money both ways.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you're telling me that you can take an old barrel, make a new barrel, and use it for bourbon again?
Not for bourbon.
Okay.
They use it for scotch.
I was about to say, that doesn't sound right.
Loophole.
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah, they use it for a different liquor.
Yeah, check. Roger that. I got it.
Yeah. So, no, it has to be used.
Leave them rednecks to figure out a loophole like that, though.
I can't say we won't put water in them and use them again, but.
Wash that sucker out. I know, right? Because, I mean, it's
shreds it out.
What's the deal on that? Why is that? Why
it's just part of the law. It's for the flavor too. So you get all the sugars and stuff in the bourbon from the new oak barrel. So that's where you get most of your flavor, and that's what all the color for bourbon comes from the barrel, and about 60-75% of the flavor. So once you use it again, it doesn't impart as much sugars and flavor into other liquors and stuff.
You go to in Kentucky?
Buffalo Trace. I tell you, walking in there when all those barrels are up on the rafters and kind of stacked through there, and the smell, just the way that history is what it smells like. And you kind of walk in, and it's so unique. And I imagine it's, I was talking to one of the master distillers who was working there. And he's like, man, it's just a pleasure to come into work every day just to be kind of see all that and be around that. And it's cool what they do down there.
Yeah, you never see anybody working for the distilleries not like their job.
All right.
Business is booming. They're selling whiskey, so
do they give we're just happy to be
kind of a
that?
Small part of it.
Or say again? Do they give you the scraps, or do you have to pay for that?
We pay for them. We've worked out a deal. Actually, the first the Cooperage I'm using today was one of the first ones. We really bootstrapped this business from the get. I traded a flag to the Cooperage for more barrel staves. It was kind of a science fair project when we started this business. My wife and I said, look, we're not going to put any money in it. We're going to bootstrap this thing, see if we can make it survive.
Yeah.
And luckily it has.
That's awesome.
Man, that's kind of the best way to do it. That's kind of that's how we came up in the military. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the expenses and everything you spend on yourself, we spend on each other. If you look at it, like that's all you have, then you're not going outside the box that builds itself. You mentoring Absolutely. Kids coming out?
We're working with a organization called USA Cares. They have a transition program.
Yeah.
And I'm now the executive director for USA Cares.
Oh, yeah.
And
so yes. They help.
So yeah.
Yeah. A little bit. You know, I'm doing this thing. That's great. I the one thing about our guys when they were our generation when we came back, and guys are rotating out. I mean, a lot of us are following the same path. It's so similar. And we're lucky too to have this technology because it reconnected us. It's just like being on a VTC again. I mean, yeah, we're not in the same AL right now, but I got you and you got me right over here. You need something, I got it. If I need something, you have it. We kind of rotate off of that. And guys following their passions and what they do, from even if it seems obscure, because that's what we are. I mean, our whole community in the military, the way we had to fight in all the wars made us that way. Those outside-the-box thinkers, man. And you know as well as I do, man, that's actually what generates the pulse, the power, the excitement about it.
I mean, yeah. Another thing is the veteran entrepreneurship community is so helpful and so kind of small if you really think about it.
Oh yeah.
Eli Crane with Bottle Breacher, he was one of our first customers and a great mentor to me. Dan Allert with Grunt Style, he gave me 45 minutes of his time our first year in business and bought a couple of flags. And I mean, just the mentorship and the help along the way has been tremendous. And it's pretty cool. And now I'm able to help other people are asking me, and I'm kind of like, that's kind of weird, but okay. it wasn't but just a couple of years ago I was asking for help.
Bro, it's like making rank.
Yeah.
It's terrible sometimes. It's like when you really, and I don't mean just like normal rank. I mean that positional rank. Like when you walk in, everyone stops laughing. You know, you can't even hear the joke, much less be the joke anymore. That kind of deal. But it happens quick. That's how you know that you're successful. You couldn't possibly know that unless that started happening.
Right.
And as we were growing too, we followed the same line. That was kind of the line that was delivered to us too, man. You know, like slow is smooth is fast, and we'll steady this thing. And then we also watch not only ourselves but each other. All the guys coming back out, and then the young guys rolling in. It's like there's not only are we out there hustling and building this thing up, man. We share it. We share the information with each other, and that's key, man. That's another thing that's different between us. And it's such a blessing to see that. Because a lot of guys, when they come out and they go back home, and have any idea what to do. You started this in your area. There's another kid over there. All he'll see just one part of it, and it'll spark something in his head. Because the best part about when we were in the military, man, is when we're offline and we're trying to come up with that stuff to fix a problem. And it's not a shortcut. It's just a new way of doing something. When we were at med school, when I was up at Bragg, man, like the guys, the tourniquets or any of those dressings or anything that we had to use that was given to us that we could make faster, more expedient, but better. Streamlining is what we call it. In the civilian world, there's all different names, but that was one of the things I missed the most. And the best part about doing this now is getting back to that. Like, I don't think we were sitting around one day, I got a question about how the hell I get this done. I can just call you up and vice versa. So it is.
It's very, we could read all the business books in the world, and some of us just don't like to read. Some of us like to listen to podcasts. Some of us like to pick up the phone and, no need to reinvent the wheel. So we're all the time reaching out to people, even in the flag business that are veterans. Like there's, even though we're competitors, we're still helping each other a lot of times.
Oh yeah. It's not reinventing the wheel. Just like you said, it's like, how do I put this wheel on that? How do I get that? It's like, I saw what you built, man, but now check it out. I'm going to try and we're going to do it this way. And, I thought about it like that, but that is a great way of saying that. Absolutely.
How many veterans do you employ now?
Oh, right now we're pretty thin. We have myself, my father-in-law helps, and then we have a Marine that helps us. Yeah. He told me to tell you hello, too. He was in the same AO as you in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah. That's who saves me. Like, when I get my ass in a pickle, they're the ones that have to come in and get me. So there's a mutually exclusive respect I have with the Marine Corps. Always will be.
He was in the Battle of Fallujah.
Well, that's even worse. I mean, Fallujah, Hobby had a pretty good one. I mean, Ramadi was a good one.
Yeah. The whole Anbar province was
Anbar. Was Anbar, dude, man. K-Bar, Pry Bar, beat the shit out of your bar. I mean, bro, it was rough down there. I'll give hats off to those fighters. They're tough.
So as a veteran, an entrepreneur, all of those things, all your lessons learned, what is your greatest piece of never quit advice?
Man, it's twofold, I guess, if you will. You get in the military, they teach you grit, never quit. That's just part of who you are. It's not what you do. It's who you are. It's built into you. And then the other part of it is you always want to serve something greater than yourself after you get out of the military. And when you have that never quit attitude and you have that part that says you want to serve something greater, it's pretty amazing. You know, generosity breeds success. It's not like, you know, selfishness breeds success. So once you're generous and you have that never quit attitude, you're unstoppable.
Yeah.
I took this guy to actually talk to me so I could figure out what Team Never Quit was all about. I never really got it to that point until you just said that. How about that? And service to your fellow man is the rent you pay to live in America. That's plain and simple, bottom line. And the never quit attitude, we are taught to do that. I never really thought about it like that till you said it. And a lot of times when we get out, what we're doing is in the situation, we're not personally quitting, but the situations we are in, it's kind of a quitting mentality. That's when guys start going crazy.
Yeah.
It's not that you're not quitting. It's just kind of you're sitting around and the moments aren't presenting themselves. And that in itself can drive us crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you get out and you start pushing, that's the struggle.
It took me 15 years to figure it out. I had to work for corporate America until I found my passion. It was kind of crazy.
Well, I've been working this whole time myself too, Pods. Glad you finally showed up.
What would have made the transition easier for you, do you think, from corporate America or even straight out of service to what you're doing now?
Which way would you go into that?
You know, I wish someone would have told me that I could have done my passion right out of the military or right out of high school without the pressures of college and society telling you you have to climb the corporate ladder. In today's world, I'm not dogging college. I'm kind of enforcing what Mike Rowe with Dirty Jobs talks about. I mean, I got a business degree and all those things. I could have done this straight out of high school. Yeah. I needed the military for that purpose. But I think that if I had it all to do over again, I would have done my passion and not listened to society.
Yeah, it's the discipline. College gives you the discipline. The military, it's same thing on how you pull that out. That's right. If I could tell myself once, I was like, when you guys get out, don't worry about it. Don't be in a hurry to worry about damn anything. You made it through the war in the military. You get out, take a deep breath, be a bum on a couch for a week, 2 months, whatever it is. That's all right. But just know you're going to have to get back up. Like, that's the want. The minute you get to a point and you're resting, you're not wanting to get back up, then you've been down too long. And that's what your buddies are for. Their ass is supposed to be motivating you anyways, because if you're not in there with them, they should be bored. I mean, that's how it works. But whatever it is you want to do when you get out, you've already been trained to do it. Don't wait for somebody to tell you to do it. Your walking papers were your permission.
Yeah.
They gave you that honorable, hey, man, that's your college degree. And it's an applied sciences degree and a combat degree. I mean, I go all day. Just signing up in the generation that we were in, you already learned that. That's why when guys get out and they go into college, they just crush it. Or if they start their business, they just crush it. They just need that kick in the ass to go. Like that, from a private all the way up, unless you were an admiral or general, man, you got to be told what to do. Even if they say they don't. You know, you just got to insinuate, you know, don't come down. But, hey, get your ass in gear. You know what I mean? Like, get moving. And all the guys, though, they love hearing that. Even when I get my butt tuned up by the missus or by the boys, but like even though I grumble and moan about it, I still needed to hear it. It's easy to forget that part.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's so easy to forget that part.
Yeah, like they don't want to hear it at the time, but
they love to hear it. Yeah, they need to hear it. They want to hear it. They love to hear it. So, absolutely.
I feel like right out of the military, a lot of guys that we know, they are so money hungry. They just want to chase something that will make them super wealthy instead of focusing on their passion that will make them.
That's right, because that's the misinformation. They're worried about that they shouldn't be. That's what we're trying to tell them. Like, hey, don't worry about that part. Because of everything that you've already been through, it will show up.
Yeah, it'll just happen. And wealth is different to everybody, but it'll happen on your own time if you're doing something you're passionate about and it makes you feel like you've got purpose.
Oh, yeah. If you go out there trying to hustle in somebody else's paradise, earning their money, it'll drown you. You'll hate it. You'll keep chasing it. I need more of it because I don't have that satisfaction that person has with less. And what that means is that you were in the wrong AO.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy. Like, I did corporate America, and I had two – when my kids were born, I was traveling all the time. I was traveling 40, 50% of the time. I'm like, I should have stayed in the military. Like, I'm not seeing my kids. And I was doing the very thing that I got out not to do.
Without the benefits.
Without the benefits and without, you know, the purpose.
We were talking about this, too. One of the things that you run into when you get out is the stuff that you don't have to worry about when you're in. Medical, dental, and food. Housing.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to sweat that at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of guys, the pressure they're having is from that. Being in the military is a bit just like being, it's a nuclear family. I mean, we have doctors, lawyers, guys who work in the gym, guys, baseball players. You can rodeo, swim, whatever you want to do. Combat. Seriously, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's our own little world.
It's our own little world. And not very many people want to be in it because it's misunderstood, which is fine. It only takes a handful of us to get this done. But I couldn't really appreciate, because no one ever told to me like that. And two, until I couldn't appreciate until I got in, I was one of them. I'm like, hey, I got to get in and experience this for myself. And then when you come out, you're like, wow, that's another reason why I miss it. Because it's like a nuclear family. You could literally be walking down the road and see somebody in a different uniform with a different rank, and they could still dress your ass down, help you out in some way, teach you something, and then send you on your way.
Yeah. Marcus got razzed the other day by a guy that was not higher in rank, but he's older and has been married longer. And he's like, boy, I can teach you a thing or two. I've been married 53
years. Oh, yeah, when those silver guys, age is rank, right? Age is real rank. So I get my ass tuned up all the time by the elders. They're not scared at me at all. It's awesome.
They got that old man strength.
That's it,
too,
man.
I don't mess with
them. Ooh, that old man strength, whip your ass every time. That's exactly how that line was delivered to me. It's true.
So how can we help your business? How can we promote what you've got going on? Are you on Instagram or social media?
Yeah, we're on all the social media channels, Cruise Customs Flags. You guys can just support us by getting the word out what we're doing. And you know, the business model is very simple for us. The more flags we sell, the more veterans we hire. And that's what I tell people all the time. Like, I have a vision of a shop full of guys getting after it and giving each other shit all day long.
Yeah, that's just like we were in.
Cool products.
Yeah, rebuild that on the outside. That's what we're trying to do, right?
Yep.
That's the best way of saying that too, man. We miss that so much that we're going to rebuild it in the civilian world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can't go back. Or at least they won't take me back. So
yeah, I mean, they've already were too old for that. Yes. And we miss it so much. If it was that good to us, even in the environment that we were in with all the war and all that stuff, that was still that good to us that we want to rebuild it on the outside to give back not only to everyone around us, but ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what guys
are. That's what I found out, man. I lost my job, and I was like, I did this to give other veterans a new purpose, you know, from an anxiety PTSD standpoint, ended up finding my new purpose.
Yeah.
And it kind of was like, wow, I had an epiphany moment. Like I beat myself up for like a day or two when I lost my job and once again told I wasn't good enough. And then it was game on after that.
I can't stress that to y'all out there enough. If you hear that sentence, if that phrase comes down on top of you, you're in the right spot. You're about to make a serious change and go in the right direction. That's the trigger. Yep. I've seen that too many times now and heard it from too many successful people who know it's not a thing.
It's basically like God saying, you're not on the right path.
Yeah.
Go do something.
What you said, exactly what you said. My wife was telling me for about a year, and I think a month before I lost my job, we went to church and the sermon was on Gideon.
Yeah.
And the felt and the you know, the dew not on the felt and then the dew on the felt, and Gideon needed a sign. I lost my job. My wife's like, that was your sign. Like, I've been trying to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it takes that. We think it's a fall, but it's really not. It's a boost up.
Well, when do you make a transition? It's not when everything's good. We don't want to transition out of anything when it's good. We go when it's in the lower levels of slump, like we're in right now. There's a transition going on on the planet, actually, because everyone's in it. Mm-hmm. That's when you rotate out, and then you build it back up one by one, strength, you know, brick by brick. It's stronger that way. You don't get battle weakened, man. You get battle hardened. You know that, and the people, like all of our fellow countrymen now, they're knowing that. To them, COVID was like a deployment.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because it locked everybody down in their houses together. I mean, if you were going to make everybody a team and all of us to think kind of similar, well, how do you do that in the military? Man, you whip our ass. You send us away. You lock us down. That's how we become close. They're doing this happening to us, and people don't even know it. Because I remember before the quarantine, people were like, man, if I could sit at home all day, I'd get so much work done. My kids would be great and everything. So what happens? Put a pandemic on it. And like, man, I hate my kids. I can't get nothing done. The computers are killing me. Right? It's like, we just don't like to be told what to do.
That's it.
We just don't like that.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, quarantine wasn't bad for us veterans. We used to.
No, not at all. Got more stuff done. Learned more about myself. Recentered. Learned how to slow down. Get that pace back. I needed it. I was going so, like you. I was going so hard in the paint that I couldn't even see what colors they were. They were melting together. That's how fast I was going. And I can see them now, though.
Yeah, quarantine recentered our whole family. Yeah. It was really good for us.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, brother, man.
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
More today.
Thank you for coming on and sharing your story and about your business, and we will definitely help promote that.
It was great to have Chris on today's episode. If you guys liked it, let us know what you think. You can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. That way we know how we're doing, what we can do to do better. And I got a challenge for you guys this week. If you listen to the podcast every single week, or if it's even your first time listening to it, make sure to share the episode or the whole show with a friend. Share it on social media, tell a stranger, whatever it may be, because we can't do the podcast without our listeners like you guys. And that's how we're able to get incredible guests every single week. This show can change lives. I've had so many people write in and tell me how it has, and I would love to be able to have you guys share it with more people. You can subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your shows. And if you haven't already, follow us on social media, teamneverquit.com/social. We will see you guys next week.